In trying to research an episode on healing old wounds, I went far down a path on the internet of trauma and social media. I got really angry. It seems that the messages get a bit distorted when you try to distill trauma and trauma treatment down into bite-sized TikTok videos or Instagram carousels. And like any other area of life touched by capitalism, our pain and our healing are ripe for exploitation by people ready to make money on quick cures or five-step programs. So even those people who may start out well-meaning, they can fall prey to the pitfalls of therapy and healing via the internet.
Welcome to I Wonder, Getting Curious with Dr. Christy Ritz-King. Ever feel lost in life's maze? Do you wonder how to heal from the past or raise awesome kids or build rock solid relationships? Well, I'm Dr. Christy. I'm a licensed trauma therapist and a former educator, and I am here to help you navigate these questions and more on I Wonder. Join us each episode as we delve into powerful strategies for overcoming life's challenges, fostering healthy communication, and embracing personal growth. Maybe you're dealing with past trauma. Maybe you're navigating a divorce or considering a career switch, or simply parenting a sensitive child. Whatever it is, you are not alone. So join me and let's get curious together. Today, we're going to talk about why I got mad. I'll discuss the trouble with therapy in the age of instant information and pocket-sized screens full of experts. We're also going to talk about what trauma-informed therapy is and what it isn't. And hopefully, you're going to leave here a bit more aware of all the ways the internet is trying to convince you that you're broken, but that somehow there are experts out there who can fix those broken parts for a mere 4 to 5 figures or with 3 easy somatic steps. Then you're going to hear the many reasons why you are decidedly not broken, but maybe you could use some support. So I'm going to help show you some ways to find it. So what is the trouble with trauma and social media? The trouble is that trauma is not simple, and healing from trauma is rarely quick, but Reels and TikTok are both. Also, you can live a perfectly fine life post-trauma with no awareness of triggers, but often that result is one of not feeling anything, and that's not a solution to healing either. So the whole point of social media is quick fixes. Everything from movie reviews to complex trauma is distilled down to bite-sized listicles and catchy dance videos. Remember all of those pointing overhead things we made years ago? The problem is that it isn't hard to distill the basics of trauma and even some ways to manage trauma into bite-sized pieces. But the actual work of healing is harder than a 90-second video. And sometimes that lesson gets lost in the translation. Healing is a lifelong process. It involves awareness and grace and self-compassion and holding opposing truths long enough to reconcile them in a way that helps you most. We'll get more into that later, but for now, we're just going to talk about trauma. Let me define it for you. It's an experience where we feel in danger or out of control. Often it includes fearing for our lives. You can have acute trauma, which is often what people most think about when we talk about trauma, car accidents, violence, acts of domestic violence or sexual assault, natural disasters. Then you have chronic trauma, which is the overtime trauma, the trauma of poverty, the trauma of domestic violence, the trauma of neglect. And then there's complex trauma, which is multiple acts over time and that are often interpersonal. You may also hear people talk about attachment trauma or developmental trauma. Those are kind of both. No matter the category, trauma usually involves being afraid and not knowing what to do with it. You'll hear people say trauma isn't the event, it's what we do with it. That's partially true. The events matter. But what these experts are talking about is how we live through and do to trauma. We either don't complete the trauma cycle because we can't in some situations, and that gets trapped in our bodies, and we develop coping mechanisms in that moment to keep us safe or to get our needs met, then we continue to use those coping mechanisms as we carry forward into life. So over time, our nervous system may start to interpret current day or even future events as the same type of or level of danger as those things in the past. So those adaptive and coping parts of us They respond accordingly to what's right in front of us as if it's something that already happened. That is the simplified version of trauma. When we talk about triggers, these are the events or the sensory moments that our nervous systems misinterpret. And they think of them as past trauma, kicking us into reacting for that instead of the thing in right in front of us. So things feel more unsafe or more dangerous than they might truly be. This is one of the things, though, that social media gets wrong. Because while triggers and coping strategies, they seem simple in theory, the truth is always more nuanced. When we see quick tips or bulleted lists, they assume that the person reading them is in a place to hear and integrate that information. The problem is, as always, assumptions can be harmful. You can't heal in a dangerous environment. So if you're reading your feed and also not in a safe space to heal, it may feel like you're doing something wrong. Or worse, the list might tell you you're doing it wrong. You may not be in the same unsafe situation, but you also may not be in a totally safe one today. So while it seems like awareness of these skills is helpful, and if you aren't feeling better, maybe you're not using those skills, that's often the message on social media. The real life fact is not being able to feel better in a dangerous place is never your fault or the result of you not doing the work. Also, and this isn't always simple and straightforward either, you might not be living at the scene of the crime, as some of the trauma memes might have you believe. You may be out of the place where the trauma happened at first, but you might also be in a situation that still feels unsafe or untenable. For instance, if you still have a relationship with a parent and you're an adult living on your own, doing your own thing, and there was developmental or chronic or complex trauma that involved that same parent when you were younger, cutting that person off isn't necessarily the only answer or even the answer sometimes. But how do you heal? Well, the simple internet answer is to just cut that person out of your lives, remove them, forgive them, any other number of things that you might be feel responsible for, but you aren't really responsible for. The more complex and realistic answer to healing from the trauma of somebody that you still have a relationship with involves a combination of self-compassion, perhaps compassion for them, maybe forgiveness for them, maybe not, definitely learning to set and practice some serious boundaries. But it all has to start with you deciding, what do you want anyway? Do you still want a relationship with this person? Do you feel like you have to have a relationship person? Let's dig into that. How can you cope with the feelings in the moment, but also maintain this relationship? It's nuanced. It's complicated. It takes a little bit of time. It happens over time. And you need somebody to listen to you that has an understanding of all of those things, not just an understanding of, oh, you're reacting this way because of this thing that happened to you when you were young. And so now you should just eliminate that thing. The answers are rarely that clear cut or easy. Growth after healing isn't always consistent. It isn't always a one and done. Here's the answer. I spotted the problem. Here's the answer. Do that and you'll have your solution. It's also almost never straightforward. You might feel great one day. You're setting boundaries. You're practicing self-care. You're getting all the things done. You're doing it right. You're breaking cycles. And then later that week, it's grandparents' day at your kid's school, and you feel like every single minute of the day, there's another trigger in your face. It's easy to misinterpret that as falling backward or not making progress or not healing, when in reality, healing isn't linear, and healing isn't something that ends at a finish line. You don't get to a place where it doesn't matter how you feel anymore or where things are never going to bother you again. The goal of healing is not feeling anything. One of the things that breaks my heart the most in my practice is when I have clients beat themselves up for feeling. I know that seems weird, right? I'm a feelings doctor. So you would think that when people come to my office, they have some basic understanding that they're going to feel stuff. Alas, that is often not the case. People are often upset and even apologetic sometimes for feeling frustrated or anxious or even sad, when actually life is legitimately all of those things sometimes. The amount of apologies that I have been given for crying in my office, well, Let's just say if I had a nickel for every time someone apologized for crying, I could probably buy the building that my office is in. I always tell my clients that our goal in therapy is to be able to discern the difference between unsafe and angry or frustrated or annoyed or sad. There is a difference. And sometimes when you've got trauma in your history, your nervous system doesn't know. But knowing the difference doesn't mean not getting to feel this side of the coin. You may recognize, oh, wait, I'm safe, but I'm still irritated, or I'm still angry, or I'm still really sad. Healing doesn't mean that you are able to say, I'm safe, and so everything else is smooth sailing. Gosh, I wish it was, but that's just not the case. What we do in trauma therapy is we teach our nervous systems to react accordingly in situations. That's our goal. How do we manage ourselves in such a way that we get to feel what we want to feel without being overwhelmed by it? That's the goal, and it does not happen in 6 easy sessions. The thing is, though, awareness goes a long way. And that's why so many people who call themselves trauma-informed run businesses of healing. Because when you've learned just enough to help a person see that they're not actually broken or messed up or damaged, but instead, they're actually quite resilient and normal and brilliant for coming up with the coping skills they've come up with. If you know enough to spot that and help them to change some of what they do to help themselves feel better, well, that awareness alone can be life-changing, which is why trauma-informed care is important, even if it's not a long-term thing. There is value in the awareness. And there's also value in learning your own triggers and in learning coping skills to manage those triggers in the moment. That's why so many trauma programs are successful. They're empowering and they can be really helpful. They just aren't the only answer. And when practitioners of said programs come online and, for lack of a better word, shit all over therapy and therapists, it makes this trauma therapist pretty angry. And I'm healed enough to feel that. So then, what is trauma therapy? And why is it different from yoga class or trauma-informed meditation or a coach who's going to teach you some trauma skills? So I'll start by saying this. When someone comes to me for any kind of therapy, they're just having a bad week, they're arguing with their spouse, they don't like their kids, whatever. Whatever they come to me for, I'm always looking at their experience through the lens of life experiences and how those may have shaped current behaviors. I don't start with a diagnosis or by checking off all the boxes in the DSM manual or the list of criteria for certain things. Instead, I look at where the patterns are in their life. What are they repeating? What do they wish they weren't repeating? And what makes them angry or frustrated or stuck? I work with folks to ask and questions to help them get to the root of those patterns. And then we work together for reprogramming neural connections, for redistributing beliefs so that they can change and stop those patterns in the future. It all starts with awareness. What are the patterns and what is the deeper reason for why we keep reliving the same thing over and over again? Why are we stuck? Why do we find ourselves in this relationship again? Why do we find ourselves in this same argument again? What are we doing over and over again? Because our nervous systems feel like we need to keep ourselves safe. And how can we change that? That is the best first step. And often people leave me after they've gotten that news. They're ready to look at their lives completely differently. They have the tools they need to move forward. And it's cheers to a bright future. Other times, that process of awareness takes much longer to even get there because there are so many adaptive parts and so many coping skills that they've built up over time that we have to peel that stuff away in the name of safety and unravel some of those things before we even get to the awareness part. Sometimes those adaptive parts have earned themselves a diagnosis because behaviors of safety, trauma responses, can often look like mental illness. We dig into that too when the client's ready. Some people come in really attached to their diagnoses. Some people want nothing to do with the diagnoses that might be 100% accurate. We take our time in those situations to figure out what's the best way for a client to move forward. There is not one proper answer. There are not 6 easy steps. The thing is, I'm a therapist. I'm not throwing away my diagnostic manual anytime soon, but I don't start by telling people that everything is trauma Because sometimes depression is depression and not a response to trauma. Sometimes anxiety is too. The difference between trauma-informed therapists and other therapists is that trauma-informed therapists, we look for both. We try to see which one, trauma response or mental health issue, or maybe it's a little bit of both. We try to figure that out for every client. All therapists look at the big picture for their clients. They look at how and what is bothering them, how it's affecting their lives now, and how it might affect their life in the future. And then how do we process that to help? If a therapist has trauma training, then that big picture often includes past lessons and experiences and the adaptations that have come from that. It might also include interventions that are body-based rather than just talking. It might include interventions that are both some talk therapy, some body-based interventions, some neural pathway interventions. There might be EMDR. There might be CBT. Not all CBT therapists are trauma therapists, but some trauma therapists use CBT. I do not. Personal preference, I do not. But there is a difference between a trauma-trained therapist and a therapist, but there's a big difference between a therapist and someone else who is trauma-trained. In trauma therapy, I always say, we're not going to blame your mommy, but we sure are going to look at your relationship with her when you keep fighting with your spouse or your kids or your boss. We're going to look at that relationship to see what might be informing today's behavior. My final point about all of this is that we in the mental health field know with real research, not the I looked it up on Google and did my own research, but real scientific data-driven research. We know that healing, real healing, happens within the context of relationships. We spend a lot of time in training as therapists learning how to have healthy relationships. Just ask any recent graduate of grad school. We learn about countertransference. We learn about transference. We learn not to how to do either. A simple translation for that is we learn how to not make our shit your shit, and we learn how to not make your shit our shit. And we learn about balances of power and not being a blank slate, but also not leading folks. We learn how to create the space to guide them when they decide which way to lead. We learn how to build trusting, equitable, safe relationships. And we learn that those take time. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's pretty hard to get those types of relationships in 6 easy steps or from a pack of 5 sessions or through a phone screen. It's also hard to get those kind of relationships in 50 minutes once a week, which is why therapy often gets a bad rap. But for now, those 50-minute sessions are insurance covered and accessible. So who am I to argue if that's all you can get? What I will try to do, in addition to my 50-minute sessions, though, is find alternatives to offer people. As many ways to heal as I can, I will hold groups. I will offer sliding scales for one-on-one clients. I will offer intensive sessions to give people more time and space for that deep healing. Just like there is no one answer or system or intervention for treating trauma that works for everyone all the time, it's also true that there is no one delivery that works best. I try to offer as many different options as I can, and there are a million of us out there doing the same. So if I'm not a good fit, someone is. Because at the end of the day, healing is the goal. And my mission and the mission of every therapist I know is to help people get there any way possible. This is all a really long way of saying that the work of healing from traumas, big and small, is anything but simple and concise. There are many trauma-informed therapists out there who do excellent work, and it may take time. So don't believe the internet when it tries to tell you you're broken. Don't believe the internet when they say the fix is simple. And definitely don't believe them if they say they know just how to get that fix for you, especially if they offer to sell it to you in 6 easy steps. Hey, and welcome to the segment of the podcast I'd like to call Me Time. So this is an opportunity. I would like to pretend like it's not this, but really it's an opportunity for me to just share some things that are making me happy. But in the name of providing suggestions to help you be happier too, it might be television shows, it might be books, it might be kitchen gadgets, it might be beauty and makeup stuff. It's just things that I have noticed that have brought some wonder to my week. And they will usually have something to do with the theme of the podcast, but sometimes they're just random and I have decided that you need to hear about them immediately. So today's episode, though, we talk about trauma treatment and what trauma therapy looks like. And so I picked a couple TV shows that might help give a behind the scenes look. Well, one might. The other one is really just fun. So first, we'll start with Shrinking, which is a television show on Apple TV that is about a few different psychotherapists and their sort of interpersonal relationships and their lives outside of the therapy office and how they sometimes blend into the therapy office. And we talked in the episode today about something called countertransference and something called transference and how as therapists we're trained not to bring that into the therapy office. And there is a lot of that happening in the show Shrinking. So it is not a very realistic view of how therapy goes. It may be a very realistic view of how therapists sometimes wish it would go, but it's not really how it goes. But it is a really cool look at what happens when therapists have really human experiences of their own and how does that affect their work or how could that affect their work. It's also hilariously funny. And rumor has it that my very favorite Roy Kent from Ted Lasso will be making an appearance on this current upcoming season of Shrinking. He is a writer for the show, I believe actually the creator of the show. And so he will also be on the show as an actor as well. So that's a bonus for those of you Ted Lasso fans out there. The other show, and I believe it's on, I think it's on actual HBO, maybe it's on Max or Showtime. I should have looked this up and I apologize. I have so many streaming services, it's hard sometimes to keep track, which is tells you a lot about me and my weaknesses, which is why we talk so much about television here. Anyway, couples therapy is a real life look into, depending on the season, 4 to 5 different couples in therapy with their therapist in New York City. And she's a brilliant therapist and it shows her and they're real sessions with real people who have signed off on being on television. So don't worry, it's not like there's a hidden camera, but they are beautifully brave in that they rawly share their stories every week with the therapist. And it is put together beautifully, I think. It's not exploitive. It doesn't feel exploitive. The editing is great. The sessions themselves are great. The therapist is phenomenal. She also will record her own supervision sessions. So she goes to see a therapist of her own to talk about cases and help, you know, with conceptualization and things like that, which a lot of us do. Again, the difference between therapists and non-therapists. We often are seeking supervision and support in our own work. Anyway, it's a really cool behind the scenes look at couples therapy done well. And I think the reason that I brought it up during this episode is because one of the things I talk about is how it's not quick. Like you kind of unravel and unfurl things week after week that may take longer than you originally anticipated or wanted to get through therapy. And so it's great entertainment, but also it's a really good glimpse into what real therapy can look like from a couple's perspective. It's all couples therapy. And it started before COVID. And so there's a whole season where they are doing a lot of remote. In fact, I think it might be season one. I think season one got interrupted by COVID. And so then they started doing therapy via, you know, video screen during COVID. And so that's a tough season to watch. But if you don't want to, you don't have to. They're just different couples every season. So you don't need to watch that season if you don't want. But it is a very realistic view into what it was like to live in New York, be together as a couple, live together in a home that you're with each other, you know, in 500 square feet. And it's pretty brutal. But the rest of it, while there's some tough problems, the episodes themselves aren't quite as like gut-wrenching as that season was because we all lived through that pandemic together. Okay. And then finally, I want to talk about a service that I have just started offering in January. I've done a couple of them so far. I love them so much. I call them therapy intensives, which sounds really scary, but really what it is like a personalized retreat, therapeutic retreat. So if you think about what you do in therapy, which is like, you know, you're processing verbally, sometimes with me, you're doing some sort of somatic intervention, maybe you have EMDR, whatever, you're trying to get at the root of these patterns you want to change and these behaviors you want to, you know, rearrange. And sometimes we get to it in 15 minutes and sometimes we don't. And sometimes we carry it over to the next session. And sometimes we have to skip a session because it snows or because somebody's got a vacation or whatever. After like a couple years of doing this frustratingly, I thought there's got to be a better way to not a better. There has to be an additional way to offer people to really get into the root of all of this stuff. I had done a bunch of training on somatic interventions, on deeper level EMDR, on combining yoga therapy with psychotherapy and journaling and all kinds of things. I led a couple retreats and those were great. I absolutely love that. Small groups are so powerful. And when women get together, there's almost nothing you can do to stop them. But I really also wanted an opportunity for people to be able to do that on their own, that work on their own too. So I created therapy intensives. I'm not the first. There's plenty of them out there. Other people are doing it too. But in my area, you come to my office and we do, you know, well, it depends. If you're not from the area, if you're not close enough to my office, we can do your intake online, which is basically just like a history taking session. If we don't know each other, then it's, what do you want to work on? What are your goals? You know, where have you been? What have you done? That kind of thing. If you and I have worked together, then it is, what do you want to focus this time on? And then the actual intensive day is either a day or 2 days, and it's anywhere from 5 to 7 hours, which sounds like what, but it's broken up with different interventions. We have some meditation time. We have some journaling time. We have some physical movement time. We have some verbal processing time. We might use some essential oils. We might light a certain candle. We might, you know, all kinds of different rituals and routines, which I will talk about in a future episode, that involve healing and that involve processing based on whatever we talked about in your intake session about what you wanted to do and what you wanted to get out of this time together. And then you get a follow-up session a week or two later just to see how you're sort of acclimating and bringing all of this stuff into your real life day to day. So if you have any interest in therapy sessions, all of this information can be found on my website, which is Wonder Inc. Wellness. That's wonderincwellness.com. Or you can just shoot me an email at critzking@wonderincwellness.com. And I'd be happy to share more information about therapy intensives or coaching packages or any one-on-one therapy you might be interested in or couples therapy you might be interested in. Okay. Thanks so much. Enjoy your me time. Go watch these fun shows and remember that you are loved.
Thank you for joining us on I Wonder, Getting Curious with Dr. Christy Ritz-King. Don't forget to subscribe for more episodes and leave us a review to share your thoughts. We'll see you next time. Until then, stay curious.